It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this 17th day of February, 2022. This is The Horn. This program is live. I'm home. Kind of been home. I left on Tuesday and got a message and turned around and came back because, the bottom line is that I'm uninsured. And I think that it had something to do with it. But my follow-up appointment has been rescheduled until June. And that's when I'll go and, get seen to. But at least I wasn't, at least I wasn't halfway to Alabama when that happened. So came back and I've spent Tuesday and yesterday doing a little work on the campaign. I don't know if you've seen it yet, but there's the new campaign artwork is out. You can go over to my Instagram page or my Facebook page, or I think it's on Twitter too, and you can see the campaign artwork kindly provided by the lovely and talented and just absolutely wonderfully creative Tara Devlin. Thank you, Tara. Thank you so much. So now it's a matter of raising enough money to... and I'm not talking about that here, but it's a matter of raising enough money to purchase signs and get my name out there and all that. Yeah. Hi, I'm Robin. It is indeed, like I said, Thursday, the 17th of February, 2022, and like I said, this program is live. And I'm glad to be here. So that trip will be put off until late June, and my surgeon and I talked, and he said you're doing great, and gave me some somewhat happy news, and so I'll be here this evening, and we will have a Friday on the Front Porch tomorrow. We begin with a little cowbell this evening. That's for Balmer Bob. Balmer Bob says, I wouldn't want to have to drink a beer for every time Trump pleads the fifth when he's deposed here soon, because that's the big breaking news of the day. A judge has ordered Nitwit Nero and two of his gits to testify in regard to the allegedly dodgy way that they overvalued and undervalued their skeevy, sleazy little family business. And I'm in agreement. I think Balmer Bob's right. If you had to drink a beer every time you took the fifth, you'd be pretty much under the table within the first half hour. God knows if you were using hard liquor or something. Or if you had to, then again, if you had to, if it was a drinking game and you had to drink every time he told a lie, You'd probably be passed out within the first 10 minutes of the deposition. So there's that. Brother Deacon Asa says my campaign artwork would be useful if it mentioned which state I was running in. Well, I mean, considering that they're only going to be, I mean, I think it's pretty well known where I'm from, and the signs aren't going to be going up in California or Oregon or Vermont or Alabama or Florida, just here in West Virginia. So, and does say district, House District 51. I mean, and this is all new here, but I love that artwork. But every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. So we have thanks to send out to our subscribers. Arnold, I'm live. Awesome, says Arnold. Thank you. It's nice to be welcomed. But like I said, every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude. This program is no different. And thanks so much for making it possible for me to have been away this week. Subscribers for the... So, you know, I've got thanks to send out to our 17th day of the month, 16th and 15th day of the month subscribers. And working backwards, that means thanks to our buddy Gary in New Mexico, Labor Man. And thanks to Mark. And thank you to Reinhard over on the Virginia coast. And thanks to Timothy. And thank you so very kindly to Nagla and to Robert. And thanks to our buddy Hung Like Jesus for jumping in. Awfully good to hear from you, Hung Like Jesus. And thanks as well to, well, that's pretty much it. This is that thin middle of the month kind of time. Thank you so much, though. So what that means is that we're funded. We're funded for this week, except for Monday. So we've got $275 for a fundraising goal this evening. And that's all we've got for the... You know, until Monday, because this being the 17th of February, February goes by more slowly than just about any other month, but we'll have a full week of broadcasting next week. There shouldn't be any interruptions to the broadcast schedule next week. And then the 28th follows a week from Monday, so there are six programs remaining in the month of February, and even though there's craptastic weather on the way and people are already experiencing it further west of... the hills and hollers of almost level West by Coal Manchinistan. It's rainy and cooling here, but heck, it got up to 66 degrees here today. I had to go out and run a couple of errands, and I was just astonished. Even though it was kind of gray and wet, it was awfully nice. So anyway, this being a thorn in the side Thursday, I thought we would. Well, there's a bunch of stuff that we can go into. I mean, like I said, the lead story, of course, is. Nitwit Nero, the conniption he's having over having to testify. The ongoing trial and of the other officers who were part and parcel of the murder of George Floyd. One of the officers in question. Deciding to get a little bit snippy with one of the prosecutors. There's some January 6th news. And, of course, whatever conversation y'all want to bring to the table. What's going on here? Hold on. Some somewhat good news. I'm sure it's not as good as we would like it to be, that we can discuss. But just to deal with the news at the top of the program. Yeah, Nitwit Nero and two of his spawn will in fact have to sit for depositions in the civil investigation into the business practices of his arguably skeevy business. And it could be really, really squirmy and uncomfortable. Attorney General Letitia James of New York it's her investigation. And of course the Nitwit Nero crime family are squealing like stuck pigs.
It's not there.
And pettifoggers for the three of them, Nitwit Nero, Traitor Tot, and Precious Princess I Wank My Daddy Trump Kushner. Well, they were trying to get the subpoenas quashed, but no such luck. They say that Letitia James is trying to circumvent the law by using a subpoena in a civil case about their sketchy, skeevy business dealings that might also turn out to be used in a criminal case against them. Her civil investigation is running parallel to an investigation by the Manhattan District Attorney. And in fact, Nitwit Nero has already sued Letitia James, being one of the loseriest litigants in American history. He'll probably lose that.
I'll never settle the lawsuit about Trump University. I'll never do it.
Settle it.
I'm definitely settling it. But I won.
No. So, judge of the New York Supreme Court, which is not the highest court in New York, the state of New York, that's the trial court level in New York, the New York Supreme Court. Justice Arthur Engoron denied the motion to quash the subpoenas. And furthermore said, and no, I'm not going to make these subpoenas wait until after the criminal probe is done. And so one of the pettifoggers who are working for this pack of petty crooks said, and hasn't yet figured out that he's never going to get paid, said, well, we'll definitely appeal. And Justice Engoron, E-N-G-O-R-O-N, Engoron, don't know. Maybe Stephen New York knows. When they're deposed, they'll have the right to refuse to answer any questions that they claim might incriminate them, and that refusal may not be commented on or used against them in a criminal prosecution. Which is, it's kind of hard to do that in a deposition. You can say I'm taking the Fifth, but you can also seek a motion to compel to make them answer. I'm sure they'll make this as difficult as possible because, well, that's what petty little grifter mob boss wannabes and their spawn do. And so I think Balmer Bob's right. I wouldn't want to have to drink a beer for every time Trump pleads the Fifth. Because, I mean, that would be a lot of beer. Even if you didn't have to drain the whole beer, if you just have to, do a shot, like in beer pong or something. Well, Eric the Dumber, was already served with a subpoena because he too, Eric the Dumber, is an executive at the Trump Organization. And when he was deposed in the same case, he took the Fifth over 500 times. But even that takes time. And, well, I imagine there will be a whole bunch of documents on the table. You know, like, Mr. Trump, is this your signature?
Call me President Trump.
You're not president anymore, dipshit. Donnie, is this your signature?
I refuse to answer upon advice of counsel based on the fact that me telling you that whether that is or isn't my signature might tend to incriminate me.
And there's one of the pettifoggers involved is named Alina Haba. I'm guessing she hasn't figured out yet that no, she's not going to get paid because everybody gets stiffed when you work for the nitwit Nero crime family. Another pettifogger involved is a guy named Alan Futerfas. Futerfas, F-U-T-E-R-F-A-S, no pronouncer here. And he's representing both Trader Tot and Precious Princess Iwanka, my daddy Trump Kushner, whom Nitwit Nero loves ever so much more than he loves Trader Tot, and nothing's ever going to change that. In fact, it was in the news a few months ago, or weeks ago, rather, that in fact... Nitwit Nero told the, because a lot of this stuff was taking place when Michael Cohen was still the consigliere for Nitwit Nero.
Listen,
he told Michael Cohen.
Listen, if one of them has to go to jail, make sure it's Don Jr. He'll be able to handle prison better than Precious Princess Iwanka, my daddy Trump Kushner would. Iwanka could never handle prison. She doesn't look good in orange.
Or something along those lines. Anyway, Alina Haba said that Letitia James should be forbidden to bring her civil case because she said something Nitwit Nero didn't like while she was running for Attorney General of New York. Like, you know, I don't know. We will investigate and prosecute Nitwit Nero if he did, you know, if he did anything wrong. Which does not prejudice in any way. No, he doesn't enjoy the special right of, oh, I don't know, the Queen of the May not to be prosecuted. Anyway, the aforementioned Alan Futerfas said that Letitia James was doing an end around the grand jury by bringing the civil case and pursuing the civil case that she is entirely empowered to do under the laws of the state of New York. I mean, these are both the words of Alina Haba and Alan Futerfas. You know, bill all the billable hours, kids. Bill them. Absolutely. Alan, Alina. Bill all the billable hours, pad them, charge them, because you're not even going to be able to pay the copy fees from what Nitwit Nero doesn't pay you. And meanwhile, a lawyer from the New York AG's office said to what matters is the substance of the investigation, the substance of what we found, and we've been very detailed in what we found. And then being as lawyerly as humanly possible, said, you know, when they say that the Attorney General can't bring this case, well, that's not accurate. Not accurate is a way in which one lawyer looks at another lawyer and says, you're kidding, right? I mean, they actually gave you a degree coming out of law school. You're still pleading this, right? Yeah, I get it. I know. When you've got the facts, pound on the facts. And when you've got the law, pound on the law. And when you have neither, pound on the table. And so Elena Haba and Alan Fuderfoss are pounding the table for all they're worth. Oh, well. And meanwhile, the old post office building that you've heard Scott and San Diego mentioned on a number of occasions, across the street from which was his favorite magic shop growing up as a boy in the D.C. area. Well, the hotel there in the old post office building is going on the block. The Trump Organization is selling the lease that they have through the federal government. They're selling the lease to somebody else because I suspect it's hemorrhaging money because it's toxic. And this spring, they're looking to close the deal and bring in a cool $100 million. Right. But Carolyn Maloney of New York and Gerald Connolly, Jerry Connolly of Virginia, are both on the House Oversight Committee, and they've written to the GSA, the Government Services Administration, saying that the lease should be more closely examined because, among other things, we talked about this, I think, on Monday, the Mazars letter, in which they very carefully, the Mazars accounting firm very carefully said, yeah, listen, we don't want to go to prison for Nitwit Nero. And so anybody and everybody out there, any financial information that we may have provided in the past, it's probably not going to be accurate. And with that in hand, Representatives Maloney and Connolly said that we got to look a little more deeply into this lease, because the lease itself says that any information that the leaseholder, namely the Trump RICO organization, gives to a bank, quote, shall be true and correct in all material respects. Connolly and Maloney saying that there's the grave damage this inappropriate lease has done to presidential ethics and integrity in government contracting. Well, Nitwit Nero wasn't going to take all of this just lounging around down at Mar-a-Lardass. No, he said in a press release,
my company has among the best real estate and other assets anywhere in the world, has significant amounts of cash, and has relatively very little debt, which is totally current. Totally, totally. Totally.
Kind of. You know, pitiful. But he usually puts out a lot of these things under the Save America email, you know, because he can't have a Twitter account anymore. Oh, okay, that was mine. You said, Brother Deacon Asa says, whether it's yours or you borrowed it from somewhere else, the Trump RICO organization deserves a cowbell. I'll take them anywhere I can get them. Thank you. There's been a lot of notes of endorsement and whatnot, but he's been kind of quiet apart from that news release Tuesday. Mostly he's barking and grunting about something that the guy that was the Bill Barr to prosecution appointed to the sleaze around, Durham. he says that a lawyer for Democrats shared information in 2017 with a government agency believed to be the CIA, blah, 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 about possible internet activity around the White House after Nitwit Nero took office, which Nitwit Nero's been running with and dragging around like a little rusted red wagon.
Much of the now uncovered espionage campaign of the Democrats breaking into the White House in my New York City apartment took place after the 2016 election as yet another way to undermine...
There was no break-in.
Served to undermine and discredit the 2020 election along with massive ballot harvesting, phantom voters, and so many other things that made the election a sham. The voting numbers were big and determinative.
On and on and on and on.
Why isn't the media asking who gave crooked Hillary Clinton's plumbers their orders? With Watergate, it was the cover-up that turned out to be the far bigger crime. With Hillary Gate, it is the mainstream media cover-up that is almost as big a crime as the act of treasonous espionage itself. It is showing the world why our media is truly the enemy of the people.
Good God. I mean, the stupidity truly is, in every sense of the word, exhausting. But everything else is a pitch these days. It's either an endorsement of some maggot running for office.
Dinner with Trump. Time is running out. There's still a few days left before the president selects one lucky winner to have the
president. He's still calling himself the president.
Have dinner with him in New Orleans, and so far we've noticed you still haven't entered, Robin.
Oh, I don't think you want me to. And the grift just won't quit. I swear, one of the funniest things I've seen in a long time. Our dear friend Joy in Ann Arbor posted a picture, a meme, of an H&R Block office with a sign that said, "Give us 10 minutes, we'll give you $10. And over there in the corner, somebody has photoshopped Nitwit Nero sitting there waiting for his $10. Beautiful. Yes, loseringist. That's a new word, Flavio. I thought it was losingist. Help me out. English knowing question. Well, to be the losingist is to have done the most losing. To be the loseringist is to be the loser who losers the most.
He's such a loser.
See how it works? So we've got that. And I don't know, this is separate and apart. But do you wear Levi's? Might want to stop. I used to be into Levi's. I have a hard time finding jeans that fit now. It's just that kind of in between place I am in my transition. But I used to wear a lot of Levi's. It'll be a long time before I buy any Levi's, though. Enter Jennifer Tsai. S-E-Y. She was the president of Levi's, but she had a pout fest and quit. She's pout-raged. Tweeting recently, "More than 20 years ago, I joined Levi's. I quit so I could be free." Now, she was paid $1 billion a year to be the CEO of Levi's. And she wrote an essay that the awful Barry Weiss, who pals around with, you know, right-wingers and various fascists and Proud Boys and, you know, not right-wing scum over at Substack. "More than 20 years ago, I joined Levi's. I quit so I could be free." Yeah, she quit because she could afford to quit. She wasn't actually CEO. She was the president. But she was on her way to being CEO of Levi's. But she's a firm believer in freedom! Wolverines! And the management there, the board of Levi's, said, Jen, what do you say you quit branding yourself as a COVIDiot? Because that's what the I Quit to Be Free was about. She's a COVIDiot. She's a mask hole. She's a spread neck. And she quit Levi's after 20 years because she's got four kids, and she, by God, wanted them going to school. Every day, a dossier of my tweets and all my online interactions were sent to the CEO by the head of corporate communications. At one meeting of the executive leadership team, the CEO made an offhand remark that I was acting like Donald Trump. I felt embarrassed and turned my camera off to collect myself. I'm just a humble corporate president. Damn it. A humble corporate president balancing the hard, hard job of hiring a nanny to look after my kids. And there they and there was a pandemic, and they shut the schools down. And then, like, I had to be a real parent or something. So I'm sure she's going to, at some point in time, she'll sue because, you know, freedom. And, the company offered her $1 million severance package, but she declined to do that because she wanted to speak the truth to power. Honey, you are the power. You're the president of a major American clothing corporation, for sake. But I would have had to sign a non-disclosure agreement. And, she worked her way all the way up. She started as an assistant marketing manager and became the first brand president who was a woman. And, of course, you know, COVIDiot. Didn't care about teach. I want the schools open. I am Jennifer Say. I am the president of Levi's, and I want the schools open. You know? I don't care about teachers. I don't care if the teachers fucking die. You understand what it's like to be a corporate president and have to stay home with your kids? Jesus! Little monsters. Yeah, really. And she just couldn't help it. I mean, check your privilege. And now, of course, you know, this was back in July 30th of 2021. This is her pinned tweet. Up until February of 20, if asked about my politics, I would have said left of center. But as I've watched progressive leaders destroy public education, deny kids access to public life, ruin small businesses, demonize a segment of the population to divide us, and degrade the public discourse, I don't know where I fit anymore. I didn't leave the party. It left me. Jen, that was BS back when segregationist Democrats were pleading it in 1968. It wasn't a good look then. It's not a good look for you. I upended my entire life, 30 years in San Francisco, so my kids could go to school and experience a normal childhood existence. In Colorado, they attend school, play freely, participate in sports, hug friends, and even teachers. They're young. They're not required to think of themselves as filthy vectors of disease. They participate in public life, go to the playground unmasked, and are relatively carefree, the way 4- and 6-year-olds should be. Again, didn't care, you know, as Matt in San Francisco has pointed out, you know, especially with the Omicron variant. Now, this was back in summer 2021. Omicron hadn't even raised its round O-shaped head yet. And she was having a conniption. And then once Omicron got loose, well, the place where the filthy vectors of disease lived were the toniest, most expensive, whitest parts of San Francisco. And the poor kids are suffering. In San Francisco, another year of school is threatened, third school year. Poor kids suffer the most. Inequality deepens. Children are stigmatized. You know what stigmatizes children, Jen? Dying. I'm pretty sure children feel stigmatized when they're rolled onto their belly, get a garden hose down their throat, and are horizontally crucified and sedated. And there it is. One, two, three, four more tweets in. Any deviation from the orthodoxy, the mainstream narrative is demonized. You are canceled! Not to put too fine a point on it, but Jenny Say, she wasn't fired from Levi's. She quit. In the language of unemployment compensation, which I'm sure she didn't file for, but in the language of unemployment compensation, when you do a voluntary quit, you don't get your unemployment. But she's been canceled. And she's doing it for the children. It's not fun to speak up and stand out. I don't come by it naturally. I like to be liked, but I like kids more. Kids need to be supported, not demonized. Misopedia is rampant. Misopedia? The hate of clear Japanese soup? No. The hate of children. I will give up my standing. I will accept being called strange and dangerous and stupid. Well, how do you feel about spread neck, COVIDiot? Filthy vector of disease. And of course, we're all going to drop our mask mandates now, so maybe she can move back to San Francisco, if San Francisco will have her. Because everybody's going to drop their mask mandates, and we're just going to run around and breathe on each other. And the children will be able to see each other's faces and understand that if they can see each other's faces, so can Jesus. And then, of course, a political party that constantly terrorizes the populace and encourages disavowal of each other. I can't sign up, so I'm a woman without a party, but that's okay. I've got y'all, former lefties, currently homeless, growing in numbers, not going away. We got to... Oh, somebody wants to run for office! You know, you gotta wonder about Jen here. A party that constantly terrorizes the populace and encourages disavowal of each other. Constantly terrorizes the populace. Well, isn't that kind of what the mask holes and COVIDiots and spreadnecks did? Isn't that what the maggots did from before 2016 forward? Yeah, I think it is. I mean, isn't it the unvaccinated who made everybody sicker? Who allowed Omicron to run wild? Who allowed Delta to run wild? You know, that wasn't the people being careful and masking and social distancing and getting their shot, getting their vaccines and getting their booster. It just wasn't. It wasn't the people in the party that says that, that Jennifer Say says left her. And so I guess she's seen that it's a, you know, looking at people like former lefty Robert Kennedy Jr. I guess she realized, hey, this is looking like a pretty quality grift. Beats the hell out of working for Levi's. And so after all of this baloney, somebody said to some wing nut said, we on the right have had a consistent platform for 100 years, limited government, personal. Really, 100 years? I mean, that takes in the time back before Brown versus Board of Education. That takes in Jim Crow there, Jason, right? Personal accountability, right to life, and fight to, and right to protect ourselves. Values shouldn't change even as agendas do. Welcome to the revolution. To the barricades, brother. Oh, for pity's sakes. So 20 minutes ago, this spreadneck quoted a story from tabletmag.com, the mask debacle, how partisan warfare over mandates became a central feature of the pandemic. Mask mandates are a microcosm of a key failure of our pandemic response, the poor climate for public discourse fostered by an elite culture whose overconfidence led to a prolonged strategy of undermining open discussion. And she said, this is really good. I opened a bottle of California Conundrum, you know, the white stuff, and got out and got out some artisanal goat cheese, and I read the whole thing. And, of course, she then she sends out a story that was written about her in Adweek with a quote from that. So, I hope that companies are thinking about how to create an inclusive culture that welcomes many viewpoints. I don't believe kids and free speech are partisan issues, so politics should really never have to come into this discussion. Except it did, and it does, because we've got a significant amount of this of this country who, if you say, yeah, listen, we've got a pandemic. We got to be socially distant for a little while. We got to be careful so we won't lose a million Americans. Oh, wait, too late. And the other side says, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to drink me a big old glass of pee-pee and eat a handful of dirt. And that horse paste tastes like apple. Now, it will sure as God made little green apples, it'll give you the trots and the runs and the turtle squirts, just like eating too many green apples will give you a bellyache and the squirts. But I tell you what, it's got that apple flavor or something else. Kind of helps with the flavor of the pee-pee and the dirt. So the question for Jennifer Say is, how do you create an inclusive culture that welcomes the people who acknowledge science and understands that viruses spread easily and that vaccines are the only way to create any level of immunity versus the people who want to drink the pee and bleach? And the question is, do we really want to be inclusive of the pee drinkers and the dirt eaters? And I don't. That's not a valid point of view. Yeah, I reckon we got us a pandemic, and you know what I got here? I got me a quart mason jar of pee-pee that I've been saving for a week. You know, that's what I do. I go to the bathroom, and I pee in the mason jar, and I put, I ain't flushed no pee-pee in at least 2 months. On the way to the bathroom, sometimes I don't even go to the bathroom. I just stand there in front of the open refrigerator and pee in my mason jar and put it back in the fridge. I got a whole refrigerator full of pee-pee. Drink a little in the morning, drink a little at noon, drink a little at night. It's like that old Dr. Pepper thing, you know, 10, 2, and 4. And so far, she's not getting dragged for any of this stupidity. Because the people who drink the pee-pee and eat the dirt are rallying around her. She has been adopted as a professional victim by the anti-vaxxers. Here's one such blonde lady. Speaking out on kids' behalf for the last 2 years about school closures, masking, vax mandates is absolutely not political. It's speaking out for what you believe in your heart is the right thing to do for our kids. Of course, there are other women who believe in their heart that the right thing to do for our kids is to make sure that a county school board in Tennessee removes books about seahorses. Because gender curiosity. Yeah, I know. I'm trying not to do the drawn out sighs, but it's kind of hard not to. I guess I'm supposed to be talking about I guess we're supposed to be talking about Ukraine. And I'll say this much, Flavio pointed out to me that there is still very much of a very real Nazi problem in Ukraine, and I've never doubted it, and that there is apparently a movement afoot here in the U.S. for Nazi-leaning, I don't know, former members of the military. Anyway, to go and join up with the Ukrainians to fight the Ruskies. And Flavio and I talked, well, we messaged briefly over this on the post to which he drew my attention. And frankly, my bottom line, I mean, I'm pro-peace. But this seems to have a real silver lining in it. Namely, if we could get all the Nazis in the United States to go and fight the Ruskies in Ukraine, we wouldn't have any Nazis in the United States. I mean, isn't this X minus X equals zero? Try to find the downside. Put them right on the front lines, all the, you know, The Nazis from Lincoln, Rockwell, whatever, whoever the president of the Henry Gibson played the head of the Nazis in the Blues Brothers movie. Put them all out there on the front lines, the Nazis. And the Ukrainian Nazis and the American Nazis and the Nazis from wherever. And then everybody else turn around and go, see you later, Nazis. Do your damnedest, Pootie. And then watch all the Nazis. Well, I don't know. They'd probably turn Romulan in a second. There's our obligatory Star Trek reference, and all you'd see of them were assholes and elbows. Yeah, but back to the masking issue. It was just a little bit ago that the governor of the state of Washington, Jay Inslee, a man for whom I have a considerable amount of respect and had great hopes for at the beginning of the 2020 presidential election cycle, but he couldn't get any he couldn't get any traction. Beginning March 21st, with the coming of spring, according to Washington Governor Jay Inslee, masking will no longer be required in most settings in the state of Washington, including schools. So, hey, Jennifer Say wins. And this is one of those times when I get really, really frustrated with the for-profit media. Because all day long I've seen the COVID numbers are way down. Way down is not the same thing as gone. And Omicron is not the end of the Greek alphabet. And as of March 1st, there will be no longer any need for any vaccine verifications for large events in the state of Washington. You know, yeah, I'm in the process of doing a name change. You know, turning the R-O-B-I-N and R-O-B-Y-N. We've talked about that. But I'm also going to pick out a nice feminine middle name for myself. I've got a list. It's down to two, really. But this makes me think, you know, when I think about all the, woohoo, COVID's over, yeah, ooh, let's get together and smock and LARP and grabulate all over each other and get in big groups with no masks and we'll all be butthole to belly button breathing all over each other. Freedom! Maybe for my nice feminine middle name, I should choose Cassandra. Because if you recall your Greek mythology, Cassandra was a daughter of Priam, was it? The king of Troy? And Apollo, apparently being a, you know, one of those Greek gods, you know, the Greeks came up with some gods who behaved like the Greeks themselves did. It's funny that way. Human beings tend to make their gods do and talk and say and feel and think just like they do. And it's not a new thing. It's not a coincidence, you know, when you've got a religion that's filled with hate, it's not a coincidence when their god turns out to hate everything that the adherents hate. Well, so it was. Apollo had a thing for Cassandra. She was apparently beautiful. Not Helen of Troy beautiful, but beautiful. And he gave her a gift. The gift of prophecy. But the Greek gods were a playful lot. And so he said, "Ha, it's booby-trapped. Because everything you've got the gift of prophecy. And everything you prophesy will be correct. But wait, there's more. A Hellenistic Ginsu commercial, you know? Cassandra, you're going to be right about everything you prophesy. But wait, oh, this is so good, I can't believe it. Nobody's going to believe you. Ha! And so she was right about the Greeks. And she was right about the Trojan horse. She was right about everything. And the fabled towers of Ilium fell and burned. And that bright, shining city on a tell was rendered ash. The men were killed, and the women and children were carried away into slavery. Euripides handled it brilliantly with his tragedy, The Trojan Women, which at the time of its writing wasn't anything about Troy and everything about the Melian debacle during the Peloponnesian War, I think. But I got this Cassandra-esque feeling that don't want to be right, but I will not be surprised if I am. I will happily declare that I was gloriously wrong if I am. But all these yanking the masks off and getting all up close and personal and LARPing and smolicking all over each other. Well, as our buddy Paul from Parts Unknown puts it, that's just letting the coronavirus buy more lottery tickets. And one of these days, one of them's going to check a number. I won! Oh, look, I've mutated. Oh, look at me. Look at my new spike proteins. And then it'll take us another 3 months of barking and growling and hooting and grunting among the freedom types to try to get that conflagration under control. I don't know why it's so damn difficult to understand that arsonists are seldom happy setting one fire. Back when the BBC Masterpiece Theater did their adaptation of I, Claudius, Derek Jacobi as Claudius, there was a line from Nero as he stared at a flame and he said, "Fire is such a lovely thing." Yeah. Well, of course. Thank you for getting that out of the way, Brother Deacon Asa. Jay Inslee's a filthy neoliberal establishment shill, and so are you for having had any presidential hopes for him. Speaking of Jay Inslee and middle names, how about Robin J. Kincaid? It has kind of a nice ring to it. No. Cassandra doesn't seem like such a bad idea. Nah, I'm not going to do that. Yeah, Flavio said, "I thought that was brilliant. That was awesome. Have all the U.S. neo-Nazis go fight the Russians in Ukraine. Brilliant. Get rid of Nazis here in the Ukraine and in Russia. Awesome. What's not to like? Where's the downside in this?" Oh, and by the way, a note coming in from Billable Rick. Nitwit Nero's upcoming deposition. Robin, if cult leader 45 refuses to answer questions at his upcoming civil deposition in the New York case on the ground that answers to such questions may incriminate him, then his invocation of the Fifth Amendment may be used as an adverse inference against him in that civil case. Ooh. Obviously, Trump's assertion of the Fifth Amendment in that civil case can't be used against him in a subsequent criminal case. The way an adverse inference would work in the civil case can be illustrated by the following example. Ooh, this is just like law school. Question. Is that your signature on the property tax reduction valuation application to the city of New York showing that the value of XXX property is only $10 million? Answer.
On advice of counsel, I respectfully decline to answer that question on the ground that an answer may tend to incriminate me under the Fifth Amendment.
Well, says Billable Rick, explaining, under the adverse inference rule, the fact finder could conclude that Tangerine Tiberius actually signed the property tax reduction valuation application. For each question that Tip refuses to answer on the basis of his Fifth Amendment privilege against self-incrimination, the fact finder can draw an adverse inference that the answer to the question would be damaging to Tip's case. Which could, in turn, lead to a judgment of some considerable proportions? Am I wrong, Billable? And what might that judgment look like? I mean, is it limited to just money damages? Or could maybe the Trump Organization be compulsorily dissolved? Fascinating, as Spock might perhaps say. Yeah. And so there's the filler obster. It's good to be back. First hour of the program in. And if you'd like to engage in some conversation, you are more than welcome so to do. You know how to reach the program, 844. Sorry. Yeah, let me get away from the microphone for a day or so, and I forget the damn phone number. 844-843-4676. 844-THE-HORN. Or on Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. BobKincaidHorn. We'll see where the conversation, where it takes us. I mean, we've got we've got no small amount of thorn in the side Thursday material, God knows. But I mentioned that Tu Tao was being cross-examined in Minneapolis today about the murder of George Floyd. And he snapped all snitty with the prosecutor in the case. All three, Tao and Alexander Kung and Thomas Lane, are being tried in federal court for their role in violating the civil rights of George Floyd. They're charged with deprivation of rights under color of law, based on the fact that the three stood idly by and just watched Derek Chauvin murder a man. And Tao and Kung are also charged with failing to intervene when Chauvin used unreasonable force. And so with Tao testifying, Assistant U.S. Attorney Leanne Bell was crossing him for why he didn't intervene. She asked him, did you communicate to your partners that you were being told what you were being told by the bystanders? You know, the bystanders saying, you're killing him. You're killing him. He's dying. He's going to die. They're killing him. Did you communicate to your partners what you were being told by the bystanders? No. Do you know when George Floyd stopped breathing? And the pettifogger jumped up and said, objection! And what's your objection, counselor? This is going to make my client look like shit. The pettifogger objected 10, 12 times during that whole exchange. And the Assistant U.S. Attorney Bell had to stop and rephrase. Did you hear him talking during the fifth minute or not? It's a possibility, Tu Tao said. Could you tell if his eyes were closed? No. And at one point in time, asked if asked why after 9 minutes and 29 seconds he wasn't screaming at Chauvin to get off George Floyd's neck, little smartass said, "I think I'd trust a 19-year veteran to figure it out." Man, that blue omerta. And then had the nerve to say, well, you know, we had him on the ground restraining him because we wanted to keep him from maybe getting up and hurting himself or hurting the bystanders. We did that to save his life. We killed him to save his life. Dig it. And so the pettifogger for Mr. Tao said, were your intentions in any way to cause Mr. Floyd harm? And Tao, oh no. We were killing him to save his life. Lord, that's a high-hanging curveball once you get to the jury. No, really. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, you heard it. You heard the defendant say it out of his own mouth. He did it at the behest of his own lawyer. We killed George Floyd to save his life. Then start passing out little airline bottles of cheap tequila and a little tiny swirly straw. Go ahead. And, of course, with the dead guy unavailable to testify, his pettifogger helped him go ahead and slander and slander him in death. Saying that the place nearby, Cup Foods, is hostile to police. It's a well-known Bloods gang hangout. And, you know, you can't unring a bell. And so the jury heard that. It's a well-known Bloods gang hangout. How the hell is that not hearsay? Well known to who? If it's well known, get somebody on the stand who can provide us direct testimonial evidence that it's a Bloods hangout. But then, because sleazy, Tao said, well, I thought it was obvious that George Floyd was under the influence of some kind of drugs or maybe alcohol, because, you know, he was really sweaty. Now, this is, wait a minute, this is taking place in Minnesota, and I just gave Officer Tao a good old boy southern redneck accent. Well, maybe that's because that's sort of how you hear the voice in your head, or at least I do. You're very sweaty. You know how they are. When they're all on drugs and booze and alcohol and stuff, they get sweaty. You know, in hot weather in Minneapolis. He was sweaty. He was also being attacked by the police, which is nerve-wracking, and that can cause a little bit of, oh, I don't know, perspiration. And, of course, who else's fault can it possibly be besides Officer Tao? Yeah. I knew the crowd was starting to gather up and cause issues. At that point, I have a different role, which is to do crowd control to allow them to attend to Mr. Floyd. You know, attend to murder! Now, this is only the federal civil rights trial. They're going to have to do this all over again in a state trial later this year for a charge of aiding and abetting in the murder of George Floyd. I hope they can get a conviction. And, well, thank you, Jude, in the Great Northwest, where you will soon no longer have to wear a mask. I wonder if you can wear one by choice. Jude says, vigilantes, one needs only to view the photo. Incredibly good to hear your voice, Robin, dear, and excited in listening to whomever will be calling in. I already love it even before I hear the voices. Memories of Black Lives Matter in Seattle and Portland with the boots. And a link. Texas grand jury indicts at least 9 cops who allegedly used excessive force against Black Lives Matter protesters. And they did. I've no doubt. Austin Police Department officers accused of using excessive force. And the number will probably grow, according to reporting from KVUE. It may be the single largest indictment of a group of police officers that happened after cops murdered George Floyd. Thank you for this, Jude. In Austin, Texas, Black Lives Matter protesters, the cops passed out traumatic head wounds. They broke some broke bones with their alleged use of excessive force. And the grand jury is not done.
fund the use of those beanbag projectiles because they led to some of the most serious injuries among protesters. Jenny, it's also important to note that this news that's breaking in the criminal justice system this afternoon is separate from what happened with the Austin City Council this morning when they voted to settle two lawsuits brought by injured protesters for $10 million. Again, we're still awaiting word on what the charges are against these officers. I also do want to point out that police officers and their attorneys have said that their uses of force during the protest were justified, Jenny, because according...
Yeah, I guess you got to get that part in there because the law, the lawyers that the cop union has hired, well, insist upon that in the public discourse. Yeah, we were justified in cracking some skulls and breaking some bones. Curiously, even with the forced removal of the COVID-iot spreadneck mask hole truckers in Canada, not a lot of skull cracking and bone breaking going on that I've seen. Jesus. Meanwhile, today in insurrection news, the story via Business Insider of one Paul Davis, Yelena Zhanova, with the story. Paul Davis was a lawyer from Frisco, Texas. Don't know where Frisco, Texas is. Maybe John Prideaux does. And he went and participated in the insurrection against civil governance and the Constitution thereof in at the seat thereof in Washington, D.C. on January the 6th, 2021. And he went to the Stop the Steal rally and then went on at the urging of people at the Stop the Steal rally to, you know, attack the Capitol. And this lawyer from Frisco, Texas, said his life done fell apart after January the 6th. Yes, it did. Everything I'd worked hard for 10 years for evaporated overnight. I experienced loneliness, and I felt like I didn't want to live anymore. Sorry, I got a little choked up. He was an insurance company lawyer. And on January the 7th, the insurance company where he was an associate general counsel for 7 months, poor maggot, the insurance company fired him in a tweet. Oh, my God. And then the 40-year-old lawyer said that a news station there in Texas, they tweeted that he lived in Frisco, and he was powerful afeard that a mob there in dark navy blue liberal Texas would assemble around his house. And that's when he asked his daddy to pick up his house keys from his financier and get all of his guns and his gold out of the house. Really? Guns and gold? And then my fiancée wouldn't give daddy the keys because after the station tweeted out that he lived in Frisco, his fiancée started to be cold toward him. And when daddy showed up to get the guns and the gold and the keys, she said, "I can't do that. It's too dangerous, and I don't want to be responsible." And then 2 weeks later, just because he tried to overturn the government of the United States of America, that's all, just like his great-great-great-great-grandpappy did back between 1861 and 1865, Well, that's... Sorry, I get a little emotional. That's when his girlfriend broke up with him. And then his friends stopped having anything to do with him, too. And Lord, he said, I just didn't want to go on. I felt all isolated and alone. I mean, I wanted to die. I really did. I was in so much emotional pain. I was so lonely. I didn't know how to even move forward with my life. And I started having the panic attacks every night because I was all uncertain and lonely. Just because I tried to overturn the constitutional governance of the United States of America. And he told Business Insider, in my mind, I didn't do anything wrong. No. And then I heard about the FBI cracking down against the freedoms and the patriots who stood up for their God Emperor. And I was plumb terrified. It's so nice to have a story where I can actually use the right accent. I was plumb terrified when I heard about the jackbooted FBI crackdowns against people who tried to overturn the government of the United States in a coup on January 6, 2021. I'm paraphrasing. In my mind... I didn't do anything wrong. I didn't cross any boundaries. I didn't assault anybody, but I know that doesn't matter a lot of times. I was just verbally protesting the fact that my God Emperor didn't win the election. Because, you know, I still know it, because he done told me there was widespread voter fraud. Never mind the fact that a whole shit ton of Republicans won their office and got more seats in the House and held back a Democrat onslaught in the Senate. I know it was rife with fraud. I mean, when it's the first time you conduct an election where almost half the ballots are cast by mail, that's not the most secure election in history. Just by definition, because, see, they teach you to say things like that in law school. Just by definition, because the election official can't see who's preparing the ballot. It's an inherently less secure form of voting. So if it's an inherently less secure form of voting, then... we probably better stop the overseas military from voting by mail. Of course, nobody knows who prepared Nitwit Nero's ballot either, but Paul Davis ain't worried about that. I'm scared to death. But, you know... when I went on January 6th, he said, well, when I went on January 6th, at the time, I did what I felt was right. I felt right then that I was in the right for protesting the results of the presidential election. If I had to do it again... I probably wouldn't have wanted to be part of it with it used to demonize conservatives and patriots. Holy shit. This dude, bro, only regrets trying to overturn the government of the United States of America because trying to overturn the government of the United States of America has been used to demonize conservatives and patriots. Here's an alternate universe view. What if they are demons? I love that line from Station 11 on HBO. To the monsters, we are the monsters. I mean, Davis said once his story got out, conservatives gave him a badge of honor. And he took the lemons that the liberal media had handed him, and he made lemonade. Because he started up a brand new law firm, and he found his little niche in the maggot universe, and now he feels like part of something. Yep. Because he's going to focus on employment law. And he's going to take in clients who don't want to get vaccinated against Bill Gates' 5G coronavirus and know that the true meaning of freedom is the ability to fight off a disease with a mason jar of your own pee-pee. So when Paul Davis started that, he got back on track, and he was able to move forward. I mean, I'd like to not live with that fear in the back of my mind. Is the FBI coming for me? I don't regret going because I just feel like it was really part of God's plan for my life. Oh, my God. He's got all the buzzwords. God's plan for my life. Well, he'll be on, I don't know, he'll be on some religious grift broadcast network in no time flat. Brethren and sistren, the jackbooted thugs of the jackbooted Biden administration and the jackbooted FBI, they're probably coming for Paul Davis sometime, just like they'll come for you. God damn. Dude's a piece of work, Paul Davis. Now let me check in on the mail. Stephen New York says, isn't it finally clear the UK is having the same issue with cops abusing people, the blue line of silence? Robin, when are we going to acknowledge that there is a common, very unsavory character flaw for the type of people who seek to be cops? It's in the authority structure. It's why there are child sexual abusers inside the church. And by the church, I mean the Roman Catholic Church, the Baptist Church, the Church of Christ, the Lutherans, the Presbyterians. It's the authority structure. Fard him in a tweet, says Steve, just like his God Emperor Fard people in tweets. MAGA, y'all. And Paul Davis found his little niche and his little nephew. You're awful. It's a very tired cow. That verged on a... No, that was a gnur. I take it back. Gnur, gnur, gnur. And his little... Jesus. You should be ashamed. And a little bit of good news out of the Department of Education... You remember how Betsy DeVos, who knew exactly nothing about the Department of Education or being an educator, or not much about being a student for that matter, but nonetheless, under Nitwit Nero, got to be the Secretary of Education. Well, she drug her feet even when she was ordered to relieve students from massive amounts of debt that they were scammed into by bullshit, bogus, back-of-the-matchbook institutions of higher online learning. Well, 16,000 of those borrowers will actually see their student loans discharged. and $415 million of student debt will be disappeared. It's not what we want, and that's just people who were scammed. There is a running conviction in the progressive left, the liberal left, whatever, that President Biden could, with a stroke of the pen, forgive all student debt. That hasn't happened yet. In a statement, Secretary of Education Miguel Cardona said students count on their colleges to be truthful. Unfortunately, today's findings show too many instances in which students were misled into loans at institutions or programs that could not deliver what they promised. And, all we can do is keep the pressure up. Remember, FDR, you've told me what you want, now make me do it. Let's see. Oh, in further Nitwit Nero news. Yes, this program is live. Like I said at the beginning of the program, this program is live. It is the 17th day of February, 2022, and this program is live, 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 live. And we're coming up on the halfway point of the program. So if you'd like to be part of the conversation, you're welcome to jump in. Back to Steve's Gunner. When you rang the bell, my thought was, yeah, no, Major Gunner. Major Gunner? Oh, he's up for promotion. He might be Lieutenant Colonel Gunner soon. You know, ensconced down there at Mar-a-Lardass, thinking that maybe that makes him safe, keeps him safe from, oh, I don't know, extradition. Nitwit Nero is sweating everything, and now he wants to change the primary rules in Wyoming. No, really. He says, in one of his stupid little statements earlier, he said,
it makes total,
because he thinks, and the weird thing is there's actually a compelling argument for this. Primaries are nominating processes. They are not elections. They're means by which a political party selects who will be its representative for a given race in a given general election. And so, for instance, here in West Virginia, if you are a registered independent, which means you are a member of no party, you can vote in either the Democratic primary or the Republican primary. If you're a Democrat, you have to vote in the Democratic primary. If you're a Republican, you have to vote in the Republican primary. Now, it's the Wild West in places like Alabama. Democrats can vote in the Republican primary. Republicans can vote in the Democratic primary. You know, you can only vote in one primary, but you pick which one you want to vote in, and, well, yeah, hail fellow well met. So there is, in fact, a bill going through the Wyoming legislature that would change the way Wyoming votes in primaries, because Wyoming, it's literally the Wild West. If you're a Republican, you can vote in the Democratic primary. If you're a Democrat, you can vote in the Republican primary. Independents can vote anywhere they want. You know, you can't but vote but one primary, but you can choose the primary you want to vote in. And so in the Wyoming Senate, they voted 20 to 10 on Thursday, today, to advance the bill. In an early test of whether the thing would go forward. And Nitwit Nero said,
it makes total sense that only Democrats vote in the Democrat primary and only Republicans vote in the Republican primary.
Because he's trying to stop Liz Cheney. Because if this bill doesn't go through, then the number of people who absolutely despise every breath that moron takes, that loathsome, treasonous misanthrope, well, Democrats and independents alike are liable to flock to the Republican primary to make sure that, for God's sakes, this make eat dirt and run rabbits and drink pee. They would probably flock to the Republican primary to keep Liz Cheney in office. Never mind the fact that for all of those Democrats, they'd be, well, there's that troublesome phrase we run across every now and then. They would be voting against their own interests. Because remember, he hates Liz Cheney now because she turned on him. He deems that she betrayed him. Because when you have a fascist, authoritarian, dictator wannabe, well, your loyalty must be 110% at all times. Whatever he wants, you do. He expects that if he said froggy, Liz Cheney was supposed to turn green and hop. And when it came to impeachment, she didn't. But of course, she had a 95% voting record, voting with every blessed thing he wanted. But that is insufficient ideological purity. And so the maggots in the Wyoming legislature may do his bidding. Now, bear in mind, Liz Cheney has a campaign war chest that makes it possible for her to burn a sopping wet herd of sopping wet elephants with sopping wet $100 bills. But, well, if the primary is limited to Republicans only, she may be in trouble. Because, of course, the only thing left of the Republican Party in a place like Wyoming, just like Alabama or Mississippi stand, is a cancerous core of hard cases and dead enders who, if Nitwit Nero told them to all blow their brains out, they'd run straight to the gun store. Stephen New York says, here I go again. I think closed primaries are unconstitutional. Are you saying you think there's case law out there that suggests that? It doesn't. A closed primary does not limit one's ability to vote. It just tells you that party members vote within their party. So as, among other things, to cut down on the mischief making. In this case, it just so happens that, well, he's a transactionalist. It's all Machiavellian means to an end stuff. Steve said, I think this is the first time in his life he's genuinely nervous about the law holding him accountable. Oh, I hope he is. Randy Radar says, oh, you don't cross Count Dicula. or the daughter thereof. No, hell no. And so as we've crossed the halfway point, lo and behold, I haven't talked to Thomas in forever from over at FYI. Thomas!
Hey, Robin, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
Oh, that's a loaded question.
Yeah, I know. I've seen a few of the posts. Yeah.
No good deed goes unpunished.
Gremlins!
Yes. I wanted to call the one thank. I think some of your audience listens to the morning show and has been putting up with my technical difficulties in the morning and my own sleeping habits that are not manageable. And to thank everybody. And I wanted to talk to you about this thing with Donald Trump and the testifying thing. I can't do it on my show. I need to be somewhat wanting to talk about that and any other time. So I figured you could maybe help me along with this.
Sure.
Because, like, I'm trying to think that something good will come from this. But he's just gotten away with so much. And, like, the January 6th people are getting away with so much. It's driving me nuts. And I can't get excited about it anymore. Like, I can't, like, help me out, Robin, because it's really, I don't know where to go with this except downhill.
Well, I mean, flesh it out a little bit more. I mean, are you just talking about emotional exhaustion?
Yeah, I mean, he's put me to the point, Donald Trump has put me to the point where it's like, okay, he's going to get away with it. They're going to get away with it. It's rigged. The whole system is rigged, so they'll get away with it, and we'll be talking about crack pipe Joe. You know what I mean?
The Biden crack pipe program. I can't help it. I mean, it's just so ineffably stupid.
Yes.
And I don't mean because there's a Biden crack pipe program. I mean because there are people in the United States of America, Thomas, who could be convinced that there is a Biden.
Well, to be fair, there is actually a program in some cities accurately reported that give out crack pipes with.
Yes, and none of them are the Biden administration.
And yes, and I have, by the way, and I've said this on my show, I have no problem with it. In fact, I want the administration.
Neither do I. I don't have a problem with needle exchanges either, because it's a great way to cut down on the transmission of HIV.
Thank you. And what I want to see is the Biden administration and the left wing to say, what, so you're a death panel then? You want these people to die?
Yeah,
that because I was saying that today. I find that more disturbing and something that we can put a stop to right now than Donald Trump, because Donald Trump is always going to be Donald Trump, and there's at this point. It's like going after Hillary Clinton for the millionth time. Nothing is really going to happen from it. It's just a way for the right to fundraise and the left to fundraise, and there's no.
Wait. Yeah, I'm pushing back there, Thomas. It is a way for the right to fundraise. It is not a way for the left to fundraise.
Okay. Do tell. Because I think that the left does plenty of fundraising.
You mean send us $3.16 so we can fight back against the right wing fighting back against the Biden crack pipe? What? I mean, I'm not being mean, but no, it's not. Let me use a better example. One of the anti-trans kid bills passed out of the House of Representatives in Alabama today.
Yeah, of course it did.
And they are fundraising for all they're worth over on the right wing, especially the Family Policy Council and the Family Research Council. Okay.
Stop them, they're gays.
Stop them, they're trans kids.
Yeah.
They're destroying our children. They're transing our children.
But don't forget, Robin.
Hold.
Okay, sorry.
On the other hand, yeah, okay, the ACLU might be out there saying, you know, we're doing what we can. we're filing lawsuits against every one of these stupid bills. Can you please spare a buck?
Yeah.
But the money rolling in to the organizations trying to protect trans kids, hashtag protect trans kids, isn't a drop in the damn bucket compared to the tsunami of money rolling in from Emory and Marvoline into the coffers of these 501c3 organizations whose only purpose in life is to help more trans kids kill themselves. It's not comparable. You know, I was out earlier today, and I'm seldom tuned into anything but National Petroleum Radio, West Virginia, the version.
I'm sorry.
Well, no, and so I heard the lead in, and it was like it was kind of generic, and whoever was doing with legislatures all across America enacting bills to, and my mind, because I care, filled in the blank with attacking trans kids. No. It was an equally compelling issue. Right-wing legislatures all around the United States with a constant onslaught of some 250-plus bills trying to keep people from being able to vote.
Yep.
And at the same time that I was sitting there going, I want to hear about this. But I'm sitting there thinking, you know, I guess we're just so invisible that you don't want to. It wasn't 1A. I think it was the lead-in to Terry Gross's program, but I'd like to hear him. Somebody lead in, you know, with hundreds of bills having been filed in right wing legislatures, and of course they always use the word conservative, and that sends me right up a tree.
Well,
because it is a national disgrace.
No, you're right, and here's where I was going with this, only to say that they don't just, and you know this, they don't just attack trans kids, although they're good at it. They also, you have the Don't Say Gay bill in Florida, where it's anything to teach about homosexuality or learning about transgender
or just acknowledging that anybody but straight cis het people even exist.
Exactly. And they lump it all together to really fundraise off that. And what I'm saying is that the left needs to do better. It's doing some, like you're right, but needs to do better to go on the attack and defend people like you and me. And defend, like, I have a hard, and I know you do too with your fundraising, I have a hard enough time to get people to go to my Patreon. And I've only raised about $60. And I'm not complaining because that pays the station bill, but it doesn't give me any money. I don't earn it. I do it because I love it, you know? And I'm not even asking for a donation. I don't care about that so much. But what pisses me off is it's because we are not properly motivated and mobilized as a distinct group. Whether it be trans allies Democratic Socialist allies or BLM, we are not able to come together in a unifying force to defeat these pricks.
Well, that's because the right preaches individualism and acts collectively. The left preaches collectivism and acts individually.
Yes, absolutely. And that's one of the things that I with the network and with working with you and your show, which I'm really, you've been on our network since we began, and right. I can't thank you enough.
Oh, you're more than welcome.
I like that we get to go do more live programming. I like that our show is live now, hopefully every day. And because I really love doing it, and apparently we have a good little group now. I wish we had more participation. That being said, we do have a little group that of listeners that I like to see in the morning. And I'm really proud of that because I haven't been able to mimic that in a long time. And I think we need people who And it doesn't have to be just me. It can be anybody who's willing to motivate the left to give to, like, Tara Devlin and you and Brad and just get the word out about how rotten these right-wingers are. Because there's a fucking story on Talking Points Memo that the MyPillow douchebag is going to airdrop fucking shitty pillows onto Ottawa. And
yeah, I heard about that. I heard about that. I think I was talking about that Monday, which was supposed to be my last show for the week. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, fate intervened or whatever. Mm-hmm. Good luck to him, you know, getting clearance.
Thank you.
To do it.
And by the way, who wants some of his shitty pillows anyway?
He wants to. It's the WKRP turkey drop only with pillows.
Yes.
And he's gonna write them all off. Mm-hmm. Because he needs those breaks right now, yes. Because Dominion Voting Systems is about to, you know, sue him into an orbit somewhere out past Pluto.
Well, that's why he has his new shop out. Did you hear about this, Robin?
What's that?
He has a new, I'm not going to give the domain name. I'm not going to give him any publicity.
Oh, no. The sketchy, sleazy, skeevy, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes, he has, where you can, apparently, if you're an American company, go in onto his shop and sell your wares.
Yeah.
Now, I applaud the idea. But I don't think it's an altruistic thing that he's doing by any means. And Lord only knows what his processing fees are, considering his bank dropped him just recently. You know what I mean? So it's like, yeah, I wouldn't want to go business and do business over there with him. You know? I mean, and let's not even base it off of the Dominion scandal. Just the way he does business, like, who would want to do a business with a guy who had to beg to get back on Fox News? Right?
Yeah.
I mean, at this point, forget the Trump loving and everything else. Just the way he has temper tantrums if he doesn't get his way. It's like Rand Paul. You know, these guys, they just don't know how to govern. And they take it out on trans kids. They take it out on poor people. They take it out on drug addicts.
It's not that they don't know how, Thomas. It's that they don't want to. They don't believe in the idea of government. That's why they're constantly barking and grunting and hooting and screeching about, we got to have small, limited government.
Yeah. No, you're right.
And the small, limited government they want is the small, limited government that will only do things that they want to do. It's a small limited government to them, but only insofar as it doesn't affect their ability to pass vast wads of money.
Yeah.
To say, you know, defense contractors.
Yes. Yeah. And it's mind blowing. And by the way, I've been covering this on my show. I don't know if you've seen this because I know you don't like to, as much as I do, go into the right-wing blogosphere. The Washington Free Beacon seems like they're doing this on a daily thing now. They're targeting Democratic congressional people that are running, and they are now listing, and I'm going to talk about this tomorrow, but they are now listing certain things that they find outrageous about the candidates.
Right.
What was it? Yesterday they had a candidate that in California that supported Confucius Institute and the Communist Chinese Party, CCP, oh my God, doing some curriculum in California schools. So they're going after him for that. So you got to be outraged. They're pitching their outrage machine.
Right, and it's all bilious, unmitigated horseshit.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. You know, but they're great motivators for these right-wingers to go out. And I think the great thing we have is people like you and Tom Hartman and maybe sometimes Stephanie Miller, definitely Tara Devlin, who
don't forget Rick Smith.
Yes, Rick Smith, too. We have him on the air every night at 9 after Letters in Politics. We have him live. I love Rick. We have him, and we have great people that are doing their part, but we don't have the Fox News. And sometimes I don't know whether or not that's a good thing or a bad thing, but I damn well know MSNBC ain't it. They're okay, but they're not the liberal equivalent.
Well, do you really want, and I guess maybe I'm just playing devil's advocate.
Sure.
Do you really want a liberal Fox News? I mean, can you begin to conceive, Thomas, how utterly unwatchable that would be? I mean, granted, Chuck Todd is just a journalistic horror. Okay, I mean, yeah, but I mean, just think about who's over there at Fox, and just ask yourself, you know, would I even tune into that? Because I don't think I would.
See, I gotta be on the fence on it, Robin.
Because that's just entertainment.
Well, half of me says yes.
What passes for broadcast journalism now is barely it's barely journalism in even the most loose and underdefined sense of the word.
Robin, that's why I put my Roku on and go to Al Jazeera and go to France 24 and go to, God knows, even Sky News at some points, because at least the internet version of Sky News is slightly better than what you get in Sky News regular TV. And it's like, I'd rather go there where it's commercial free and it's put on for the views than something that is, you know, Fox News or even corporate media, you know, take Fox News out of it and just put it into corporate hands. I don't like that. I mean, there's the people who got us into how many wars? And
Thomas, where'd you go?
If I want a left-wing Fox News version, but I think it would be fun. I don't think it would be unwatchable. I think it would be interesting. Because we need somebody, and I loved Alan Combs, but we need somebody stronger than
Alan
him.
Alan Combs was a wonderful person.
Yes.
Who unfortunately just wound up being a doormat for the Hannity job. But that was the way it was designed. He was he was the broadcast equivalent of the Washington Generals, and the Hannity job was filling the role of the Globetrotters.
Uh-huh. You're absolutely right. And that's the sad situation. And I think as liberals would do better, but I'm glad we don't, because I think you're right. It might get to the point where it would be unwatchable. So I'm torn on it. But I think we need to be more collective, for sure, and less liberals and less individual.
Well, and there's a thousand reasons why we aren't.
Yeah.
One of which is, it seems almost contrary to some sort of law of nature that a giant multi-billion-dollar corporation would ever put out the kind of unabashedly liberal progressive product that you're talking about wanting.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and if I was better looking, I'd love to do it. but that being said, I don't think anybody would buy it. Which sucks.
Look, this always comes up in this conversation. Mm-hmm. Air America. Okay?
Right, yeah.
And you know, that thing was a vehicle for moving money around.
Yes.
You know, yes. Malloy got stiffed in the end of Air America, to the best of my knowledge, and unless, you know, and I don't mean to tell them, but I don't think he ever saw a penny of what was owed to him.
I don't think he was sanctioned either.
And so, you know, and it was, you know, a horrible business plan. I mean, I know how to do this. I actually know how to do this. If there was somebody out there who was willing to not look like a hound dog trying to pass a peach pit while the thing lost money for 5 or 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody's able to do that. And Rupert Murdoch's got enough money. He doesn't care. The shareholders of News Corp don't care.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the don't caring part that makes such a difference.
And the other part is, I mean, look at Sirius satellite radio. They have what, 3 or 4 right wing channels and 1 liberal channel. They
yeah,
had 2.
Allegedly.
And yeah, exactly, allegedly. And by liberal, I mean as good as you're going to get.
Let me ask you another question: is there a liberal or progressive? And don't name any of the usual suspects. Is there a liberal or progressive Joe Rogan out there?
No. I want to be, but no. But I don't want to be stupid like him. Like today on my show.
Right there. Yes, Grasshopper, you've got it.
Like today on my show, the closest we got to stupid was we were talking about oral sex, and I was saying that.
Oh, my friends, what will we tell the children? They were talking about oral sex.
I was saying that conservatives make oral sex an actual job, where I believe that liberals treat oral sex as something equally gained by both people when they do it. And the way you can see that is by going directly to Monica Lewinsky.
Ah, you're going to take me down a road here that I'm going to get hate mail over. Now stop it.
Send me the hate mail. I love hate mail.
I know. We got to get you more therapy time. It rises to the level of like electronic cyber masochism, the way you like for right wingers to hate you.
Yes, I love it, and I'm totally fine with it. In fact, I bring it on. I mean, that's what the whole show, and I don't know if you've gotten a chance to listen yet or not. I'm working on the podcast part of it again, but the whole show is not about me. It's about participation, and that's what I'm trying to garner. And I know it's not going to come overnight, but I think if we have a movement where we can get people to come in. I'm not looking for $200 million that Rogan actually really got, by the way. Did you see that report? That's out on...
I'm suffering pink Shrek exhaustion syndrome.
Well, the Daily Mail is reporting that...
That's pronounced pisses.
The Daily Mail is reporting that he got $200 million instead of $100 million.
Don't spend it all in one place, Joe.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, you know, maybe he's a heavy investor in the horse paste industry now. I don't know.
Well, now you know how he got all those COVID tests for all his guests. It's just like it's just like super frustrating that we can't have our own Joe Rogan. And the ones on the left, on YouTube anyway, are either too far left, where they're an extreme catering to the right, or they've gotten corporatized. And I'm not going to mention names because I don't get into that drama on YouTube, but it drives me nuts. And I just wish we could, on the left, have somebody out there, you know, who caters to the average Joe who just wants to get by. And I know you do, Robin, and that's why I like calling. You always make me feel welcome, and I really appreciate that.
You always are.
But I hope that in the mornings we can create a safe space for everybody who's liberal, and go from there. And because I think it's needed. And you got Slim Pickens in the morning. You got Stephanie Miller, who's okay. I like her. She's all right, but she screens everything because she's on the big media. You got Morning Joe. Ugh. And you got...
Oh, now don't go, ugh. I get tremendous pleasure out of watching My Filthy Morning Habit.
You and Tara Devlin, I can't stand it. I'll go to Fox News and poke my eyes out because I know what I'm getting.
I've become really, really
dependent.
No. I've become, well, I guess, kind of sympathetic.
Okay.
Just insofar as there's good stuff to be had, for instance, any time that Eddie Glaude Jr. is on.
Okay.
And just got to where I feel kind of bad for Mika. She just sits there with this long-suffering look on her face, and I'm not talking about her appearance. It's just that I think she would like to be a more serious broadcaster than the program allows her to be.
Yeah.
I can kind of tolerate John Heilman. He seems like a pretty good regular Joe. That's kind of a confusing term to use, but you know what I mean.
I get where you. I mean, it has to be watchable for the public, and I get that. I just like, I don't know what I'm trying to do something a little different. I'm trying to bring a more, I don't know. I talked to Tara about this on her show and trying to discuss the tone of my show, but I still haven't quite figured it out yet. I'm trying to be a cross between campfire talking and a little bit of shrill every once in a while. Because I do still get there. And I hope that it doesn't scare too many people away. Although the oral sex talk was fun today. I had a lot of fun doing it.
I can tell you're downright proud of it.
I am. I talked about blowjobs and...
Thomas!
And Lewinsky's. And
Thomas!
What? It was wonderful.
Not for some of us.
And I said I wouldn't kiss and tell, and I did. I broke my own rule. So, you know, there's that. But I want...
Sex? Let me just put it this way.
Sure.
And there's a pun involved here. It's actually unintentional.
Okay.
Sex is kind of a touchy subject for me right now.
Fair enough. I can understand.
And that's as far as I'm going to take it.
I can't.
And you know, I mean, sure. If there's a story out there where I have to talk about the hypocritical weirdness of right wingers,
mm-hmm.
I'm not shy to talk about it. I don't personally see any value to bringing up the tawdriness of the mid to late 1990s. In something that remains none of my business to this day. I used to make jokes about it. I don't do that anymore. I like to think that human beings can learn and grow.
Fair enough.
And I once said that it was something that was a matter to be sorted out among the three parties to the transaction. And yes. No one else.
Yes.
Certainly not by a kinky prurient hypocrite like the Newton Leroy Gingrich III, or whatever his name.
Amen.
Who was adultering his way through you know his own scandalous relationship with an intern whom, you know, he at least divorced his second wife and wedded so that she could become the ambassador to the Vatican.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my God, that just all makes my liver quiver.
So maybe you shouldn't tune into my show. I mean,
this is actually a halfway serious conversation.
No.
Tell me what you hope to make happen by doing that. And this is almost like a conversation between, well, no, we're not going to say what it's like. But, I mean, what, how do you advance understanding? How do you advance the dialogue by just going for the cheap and easy?
Well, see, I didn't think I was.
Advancing the dialogue or going cheap and easy?
Going cheap and easy. I thought I was advancing the dialogue, but I didn't think I was going for the cheap and easy. My reasoning, it was about a study where it showed that giving oral and swallowing gave you better emotional states and everything else. And I went for the scientific end of it. And I also brought in relationships and how people behave and everything else. I did not make too many jokes about it because all my jokes are bad anyway.
Look, I got a story that I'm saving for tomorrow because I saved it for last Friday, but Stephen Georgestan wasn't in the conversation, so I saved it again. I've got a story about fish on acid.
Nice.
And we've talked about some silly shit.
Yeah.
But it strikes me, Thomas, and I'm not a prude, okay? I'm not in the least a prude, but Those stories hit the wires for their sensational clickbait value.
Yes, I know.
Whether it's a study about oral sex or a study about fish on acid.
Yes.
Okay, but it's the degree of I don't know, naughty seventh grade tittering.
Okay, and I would like to say that looking at the show, and I'll send you, you know what I'll do, Robin? I'll send you the tape and you can listen.
Yeah, sure, send me the audio file.
And you can tell me if you think I went too far with it.
I'm not going to tell you anything like that.
I want to know if I was too tittering on it.
I can tell you that without listening. You ran with the clickbait story.
No, true.
Let all who are without sin cast the first stone. I've done it, but I'm trying not to do it anymore.
Sure.
Because, you know, we clown around enough as it is.
Sure.
I'm not trying to program your show. That's none of my business. I don't like it when people do that with me.
I think, Robin, to be honest with you, two reasons I did it. One, I don't feel I'm a very good storyteller the way you are and Tara Devlin is. So if I find a good story that I like to talk about, I will dumpster dive right into it.
That's where this becomes a therapy conversation. Why did that leap off the screen at you?
Because of the past week that I had. I'm not going to get into it. It's personal.
Okay. Okay.
But that being said,
no, we can't help what we bring in. We cannot help the fact that we have actual lives which we bring into the studio.
Yes. And I,
but we have to be careful with that.
Yes. And I have in particular,
because then it becomes self-indulgent.
Well, exactly. And I have in particular made a promise to the people, involved in my life right now that I will not talk about that on air like I used to, because they don't want me to, and they want it to remain private. And I'm okay with that. Although I still feel that I need to be as open as I possibly can with my audience about what I like without crossing the line that I have given myself. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, but I mean, there's openness and there's exhibitionism.
Yes. And I was doing a little bit of both. I freely admit that. I really admit that. the type of week I've had, I wanted to just let loose. It wasn't Friday, and I wanted to enjoy myself, and I wanted to hear other people enjoy me doing the show too. Because I have felt in the past 2 days with the technical issues and the stuff that I couldn't control, I was letting my audience down. And I wanted to be in the room with as many people as I could be and feel that way. And therapy-wise, that's why I did it. And I'm not apologizing for it by any means. I just wanted to, I needed to break the monotony of doing hard stuff. Oh my God, that did not come out the way I wanted it to.
You can't resist, can you?
The monotony of doing difficult stories and the stuff in Russia and the convoy and everything else. And no, I can't. And be a little juvenile. Because I feel that 90% of the time with my show, I cover, because we're right after Democracy Now, the live show, and we're sandwiched between Democracy Now, the live show, and then the replay of the morning show if you missed it. So I feel that I do as much hard stuff as I can, or difficult stories as I can, God damn it. And every once in a while, there needs to be a little bit of levity in the room.
Sure.
And I wholeheartedly know that I went a little overboard with it today because of how I've been feeling about myself and just everything.
Well, look, I mean, it's I take no issue whatsoever with I don't take any issue at all. I mean, you know, you do you.
Mm-hmm.
Brother Deacon Asa wants to know, what's the name of the podcast and where can I find the episode? I need to blow off some steam myself. It's been a week.
The podcast itself is not up. I'm working on that. I will post this one this weekend on the FYNation.com. I will make a blog post or something for everybody to get access to this particular podcast.
Yeah, I mean, you remind, I had a thing happen yesterday.
Okay.
It's not necessarily hilarious, but it's just another day in my life, which has gotten kind of interesting,
mm-hmm.
You know, since about September 15th, 2020.
Yes. I love your posts, by the way, on Facebook. They make me happy.
I'm glad. I stopped, Western PA people will know this.
Mm-hmm.
I stopped. We've got a convenience store chain down here. They're really good. They're really great corporate America stores. They're the Western PA equivalent of Wawa in Eastern PA.
Okay, I think we've talked about them before.
It's called Sheets, and there's some really sweet people in there. Always treat me well, and so I walked in the store, and how was she dressed? What was I wearing? I was wearing a print skirt. And a black blouse.
Uh-huh.
And the hair was reasonably okay. Makeup was decent. And so one of the workers there, one of the women who worked there, was on her way out. Her shift was over, and she stopped to talk. And we're mm-hmm. like that down here.
Sure.
And she said, "Oh, hi, how have you been?" And I said, "Great, great, look at you, getting off work. Hope you have a wonderful evening." And she said, "Thank you." She said, "You look fabulous. And the best part is you're always so kind." And I thanked her sincerely.
Mm-hmm.
And out of the corner, and wished her well, and she went on her way, and out of the corner of my eye, I saw a guy probably close to me in age, mm-hmm. maybe a little younger, maybe a little older, I don't know. Tallish fellow, might be a little couple of inches taller than me, and had a big old head of like bushy gray hair.
Mm-hmm.
And I just turned away from where I was talking to the lady I know from the store, and went over to the counter to get some nicotine pods for my son. And all of a sudden, this guy is just standing in the middle of the store, and I hear him say, "Unbelievable!" And I ignored him. Mm-hmm. And he was just standing there staring at me. And then he said it again, "Unbelievable!" Even louder. I mean, he apparently wanted, he was yearning for a response from me. Mm-hmm. I did not give it to him. I didn't come up with a snappy rejoinder. I didn't even look at him. I just went about my business. And the second unbelievable came when I paid for, the pods, and, the young lady behind the counter said, "Do you need your receipt?" And I said, "No, thank you. I hope you have a wonderful day." And she said, "Thank you, ma'am." And the minute she said "ma'am" was when he said the second, "Unbelievable!" And so the only thing I did was turn around and add a little bit more swish to my walk. And went out to the car. Berg took one look at my face and said, "What happened, Dad?" And I told him, and I pointed, and I said, "See the guy walking toward that SUV with the Pennsylvania plates?" He goes, "Yeah." And told him what had happened. He said, "Pull up next to him, Dad." I said, "Why?" He said, "Because I want to see if he's got a problem." I was like, No. House candidate arrested in fracas in convenience store parking lot is not a headline I want to read. He said, "Well, it probably wouldn't be me. I said, "Same difference. House candidate's son involved in fracas in convenience store parking lot. Again, not a headline I want to read." And so he had to be content with giving the guy the stink eye as he pulled past us on the right, since we were in the left turn lane. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, look at Brother Deacon Asa making lemonade out of lemons. Perhaps he found your makeup to be really fantastic. Unbelievable. No, because there was anger in his unbelievable.
You know,
not particularly funny, and has nothing to do with sexy time, but, you know, it was just a reminder that there are still people out there, and I will deal with them through the course of this campaign, however long it runs, either through May the 12th or November or onward, who just hate me for being me, whose very being is wrapped up in their ability or their inability to conceive that someone, having been forced to live a life of discomfort, has finally gotten comfortable. And you say you like my posts on Facebook. There's a reason I'm always smiling, Thomas. Because I'm happy. Because I'm not locked in a gendered prison anymore.
Well,
I am very happily who I am. And frankly, I want to share that sense of freedom and liberation. And yes, love. And not in any prurient sense. But in the sense of simply being happy in my own being for however long I have left remaining on this planet. And so I do things for myself. I try to be pretty. I don't present as feminine as possible, because I think that patriarchal notions of femininity are the essence of womanhood. Mm-hmm. I do it because that's the culture I was raised in, and because it's what I missed out on. I mean, I was raised in a girly girl culture. Mm-hmm. And it's what strikes me as natural and normal. And you know, it's not a question of what is the essence of womanhood. It's a question of what it means when people think you can't be because they've got some preconceived notion of some kind of hardcore deterministic imposition of standards. It's really tough to wrap your head around.
But that guy.
I mean, I don't know what his story was.
Well, let me just say this about that guy. And I'll leave you with this because I gotta go and deal with something that just came up, and I'd love to stay with you forever because I'm so proud of you, Robin, for your candidacy, for everything that you're trying to do since you've come out. You bring out the activist in me, so thank you for that. But let me say about this guy. He is lonely.
No, sad. He had his partner, his spouse, his wife with him.
No. Hear me out. It doesn't matter. He's lonely. He is so wrapped up in his own personality and in his own hatred. He has to take it out on somebody else. He's alone. He's lonely. You are only, and I know this from being self-hating for as long as I was and Republican, you only do things like that if you hate yourself and you are alone. He could be with three women and be a Mormon gigolo for all I care. He is alone. And I pity him. Because he will never understand the love you have for other people, the love I have for other people, the tolerance we have, any of that. He will never come to, because he has not come to grips with his own reality and what he has, and he has only hatred. He is alone.
Well, there's a possibility. There's another way to look at that.
Okay.
There is a certain type of person, and they have come to the forefront. I feel pretty certain. I feel pretty good at guessing how he votes. Mm-hmm. And they are very proud. Our pal Joy in Ann Arbor was recounting the story of a woman she ran across in a doctor's office.
Mm-hmm.
Who was babbling, you know, maggot, COVID-iot, mask hole, spread neck stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And noted, you know, she was saying it loudly. And I said she was saying it loudly because she's proud of it. And I think we agreed on that.
Mm-hmm.
And for the last 4 years, these people have been empowered, Thomas.
Yes.
To believe with every fiber of their being that everybody needs to know who they hate.
Yeah.
And that they have some sort of, I don't know, relativistic moral duty.
Yep.
To share it, to spread it, and to make us all aware that, by God, they're there.
Because they're alone. You just made my point, I think.
Well, no, I don't think it's maybe, but I think it's because that is what their group insists that they do.
Yes.
I mean, some things are toxic, some things are not. I mean, I remember back in 2003 when George W. Bush attacked the innocent people of Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And there were families all across the United States whose loved ones were sent to do that business. And all they could think about is, I want them home.
Yep.
I want them home alive. You know, 5,000 or so didn't make it back alive. We know some of the stories, but certainly not all of them. you know, if we ever get around to building an Iraq and Afghanistan war monument, it should, I said long ago, it should look like an oil pipeline.
Yeah.
With names on it in black granite. And the people who just wanted their loved ones home alive, whatever the outcome, even if they were, you know, oh God, we're going, and, you know, maybe they were driving around in their Cadillac Escalades, blaring that Toby Keith song about Lady Liberty putting a boot in somebody's ass.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted their loved one home alive. So everybody who was like that and who supported troops went out and got a cheap Chinese car magnet in the shape of a yellow ribbon, made in China, and put it on their vehicle out of at least somewhat noble sentiment. And that's the innocuous part of it. But in the last 6 years, it's 2022 now, isn't it? In the last 6 years, a dynamic has arisen in this country where the Trumpian right is angry about everything. Everything is a liberal plot to destroy them. They are so delicate and so dainty and so fragile and so friable. And everything is a threat to their very existence. Because they have been conditioned via what a friend of mine once called a shared psychotic disorder by outlets like Fox into thinking that everybody who isn't them is after them. You know, I've joked for years about Emery and Marvelline sitting in their their matching Barca loungers, watching Fox, you know, down there at the Ballerina Swan Lake Country Club and Tennis and Trailer Court. And while they are a broad brush caricature that I paint, they're also very much indicative of a phenomenon that is quite real. Because, I mean, someday maybe we'll find out that Fox News TV Radio Rwanda actually shortens lives. Because stress is bad. Nerves are bad. Making people constantly afraid is bad for the afraid people's well-being. I mean, the things like cortisol goes up. And there are all kinds of endocrine responses that take place at subcellular levels. And there are countless tens of thousands, if not millions, of Americans who have been hurt, who have been harmed, and who have been traumatized by outfits like Fox and Onan, the network that spills its news upon the ground, and Newsmuck and Real America News. And to a certain extent on our side. I don't try to traumatize people on this program, but some of the news is traumatic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I try to talk about it in a way that doesn't elevate blood pressure too much, but sometimes I lose it. Sometimes it's crazy making. And we've got, and I mean, like this morning, and the drumbeat over this apparently imminent war in which Russia invades Ukraine. And this morning it was footage of a kindergarten that had allegedly been shelled by the Russians. And it smelled a lot like the justification for the Germans rolling across Poland. You know, the Poles attacked a radio reception transmission shack near the Polish border. We must do something. And of course, immediately the recriminations began to fly. The Russians said, no, that was those crafty Ukrainians. And the Ukrainians said, what? Y'all did this. because we all too easily forget that they've been at war for 8 years. You know, there's a lot of Ukrainians out there saying, what coming war? We've been at war for 8 years. There's a significant chunk of Ukraine's sovereign territory that has Putin's troops sitting in it.
Yep.
And that makes it his by certain ancient European standards of feudal behavior. I remember bellowing on a stage back in January of 2020 because it's got my troops all over it. That makes it mine. That's a fun line.
So,
but you know, Annette and I were sitting there watching, and she said, "A kindergarten? My God! They attacked it with the kids there." And so, you know, there's that old line that truth is the first casualty of war. And if you believe what's being said, we're not going in there. But how many times have we said we're not going in there? Woodrow Wilson was elected in 1916 on the campaign slogan of he kept us out of war. FDR busted his ass not to go into the Second World War. But he kind of wanted to. And that led to the paranoid conspiracy theory. You know, the first great lie hop of the 20th century, maybe, or at least the second, you know, lie hop, let it happen. That somehow he knew the Pearl Harbor was going to happen and just sat back because he knew that would get him into the war. Now, it's bullshit. There's nothing to support it. But that did not stop people from believing it. And that there's a possibility, but from a purely emotional and image-driven status, I couldn't help but notice that, by God, I was watching MSNBC at the time, they've got their martial music queued up and ready to play with all the drum beats. And Richard Engel is in Ukraine.
Yeah, of course they do. And that's
we are being conditioned.
No,
at the risk of sounding like Alex Jones. But to say that you know, psychological principles are at play is not to be Alex Jones or Pink Shrek. It is to note that psychology and advertising or messaging or propaganda or anything has always been part of it. I just got a note from our dear friend Cynthia in the Bay Area. She says, "And what those lying so-called news bastards are doing in brainwashing the maggots is not doing my health any good either. I swear they're costing me years off my life in my anger at them. I wish I could just ignore it all, but I can't. My sense of truth and justice is too great to tolerate their propaganda and the damage they're doing." Sigh. I know. Yeah, yeah.
Let me, I will promise.
And I didn't mean to keep you on so long. I'm sorry.
It's okay. I have something personal I have to deal with, but I wanted to thank you again for letting me on. Tomorrow we'll be live at 9 a.m. And I'm going to send you, as soon as I figure out an easy way to do it, the thing, the yesterday's show. And what I will do is, if you want to catch it on Saturday or Sunday, I'll replay the show Saturday and Sunday instead of Friday's show, and people can catch it then and go from there, 9 in the morning, for Saturday and Sunday. I'll just replay it then, and I'll try and figure out a way to get it up onto a podcast, because I've been meaning to do that, but I haven't quite got there yet, so lazy. But thank you again, Robin, for all you do. And I really enjoy, I wish I wasn't such a stranger.
You're welcome here anytime.
Thank you so much. And you have a great night, okay?
Okay, you too. Take care, Thomas. Bye now. I'm Pal Thomas from FYINation.com. You know, it's funny. I sit there and talk with Thomas about prurient stories for prurient's sake. Tell me if this is one of those. Is this prurience for prurience's sake? There is a woman in Texas named Sarah Stogner, S-T-O-G-N-E-R. If you just, you know, have to maybe see it and find out for yourself. Sarah Stogner is running for what sounds like, if you don't know Texas politics, it sounds like, well, okay, good for you, Sarah. But she's running for a seat on the Texas Railroad Commission, which actually has a whopping load of power to it. Because they oversee... Oversight, yeah, we'll laugh. They oversee the oil and gas industry in Texas. And so she produced an ad in which she appears astraddle in a cowboy hat, and I can't tell if they're boots, and I can't tell if it's a bikini. It might just be her bra and panties. She appears astraddle an oil well pump jack. Hat, bra, panties, socks, boots, whatever. That's it. And I guess we're supposed to be breathless about it. Let's check out the audio.
Stronger with Stogner. Please vote early starting tomorrow.
Jump on it! Jump on it? Really? I mean, it's all of 5 seconds long. And, okay, I'm certainly not going to body shame. I have absolutely nothing to say about that. She can appear any way that she wants to. But that having been said, why do you do it? Well, she said, by way of on Twitter introducing her 5 seconds of fame, she writes, "They said I needed money," and a laughing emoji. "I have other assets." Maybe this is female empowerment. I don't know what the standard would be. I remember when there were sort of semi-publicity photos of Barack Obama on vacation in Hawaii. Dude was ripped. Just a pair of board shorts, no shirt, you know, just walking on the lovely beaches of Hawaii. And he was impressive. Especially, you know, if you were to say back then challenge, oh, I don't know, Bishop Willard Romney to appear in similar fashion. We are such odd, odd little primates. Is it prurient to talk about that? And somehow or another, she gets to be a victim now. And, she said, "I've been screaming and jumping up and down about very important things that are technically complicated and kind of scary, but now that I've got your attention, you know, let's talk about them. Why do we get so upset as a state, as a nation, whatever, about sex? Let's get angry about stuff that doesn't have to do with love. Let's get angry about pollution and lying and stealing and evil." Wait a minute. She's a Republican. Can I get a little help here? I mean, because, well, I've got to, well, maybe I'm wrong. She said, my goal is to draw attention to the issues. Use social media. It'll use you. Next-gen government must be fierce and fearless. And then the San Antonio Express News handed her a pogo stick so she could leap up onto the cross. Because they rescinded their endorsement of her in the GOP primary. And she accused the San Antonio Express News' decision to rescind their endorsement a knee-jerk reaction. And she said she's a victim of sexism. And I agree. And thank God for Texas Monthly. Texas Monthly said, you know, it's interesting, the San Antonio Express News, which is apparently, you know, the morning moral volcano and battle cry of freedom. They said, curiously, they have not rescinded their endorsement of another Republican candidate who recently called for civil war. But a woman with a pair of pasties and panties and boots and a hat, oh, they got to rescind the endorsement there. And then speaking to Texas Monthly, she said, when you have boobs, you get held to different standards. And she's not wrong, which may be kind of weird for me to say about a Republican. Still wouldn't vote for her, but not necessarily wrong. And you know, here's where the substantive political analysis comes in. If you are a good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian, Republican, whatever shall we do about Sarah Stockner? What if she also has Christian family values? Or what if in the privacy of the voting booth, a Baptist deacon, recognizing her name because now she's getting the name recognition she needs, having discussed this with his good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian, Republican marriage between one man and one woman wife, oh no, honey, I would never vote for Sarah Stockner. Why, that harlot rode, she rode that pump jack like a pony, all naked and stuff, like Lady God Awful or whatever. But then he goes into the voting booth. Click, check, punch, touch, and there's another vote for Sarah Stockner. Is that a problem? And I don't ask that rhetorically. I mean, this is an effort. She apparently believes in her campaign to win by any means necessary. Because whatever kind of Republican she is, and come on, please, it's Texas. She wants the job and can't get any traction. All right, Brother Deacon. You're going to get shit for this. Apologies if this sounds sexist. And you know, if you have to write that on the front end, Brother Deacon, it probably is. Because I certainly don't mean it to be. But I just checked out Ms. Stockner's TikTok, and I'll tell you, this Brother Deacon would certainly vote for that there particular repiglickin. Oh, mercy! Ain't heterosexuality just grand? Brother Deacon. You know, Brother Deacon's not afraid to go where others fear to tread. But you know what? There's a reason they put scantily clad models around new automobiles. There's a reason that big old beefcake boys get cast in reboots of the Jack Reacher series. We may think we're above all that, but our lizard brains ain't. Most definitely not. Randy Radar says, if a woman is wearing two pasties, I'll replace that with panties. In public, is she not a naked woman? Similarly, if a man is wearing a thong in public, is he not a naked man? Oh, the children, the children. Well, never mind, because we've all lost our privacy anyway. Yeah, I know. The children. I guess Sarah Stogner can write off the donations from the Family Policy Council or the Family Research Council or the Council on the Family Values or whatever of Texas. Or maybe not. It's one of the things. Right-wing politics are a very pragmatic and, again, Machiavellian politics. And what would cause cognitive dissonance in us causes no problem whatsoever. I mean, look at the way that the evangelical Protestant movement pretty much threw everything it ever believed in the crapper from the draft for the sake of the draft dodging son of a Klansman. Thomas, why do you drag me into this shit? But the double standards are real. They're incredibly real. And, well, the closest thing I can come to by way of a comparison, who was that beefcake guy that ran for Senate in Massachusetts? Scott Brown? Wasn't he briefly the senator from Massachusetts? And then Elizabeth Warren beat him? The closest I say that he's the closest I can get to a comparison on the male side of the spectrum, because at one point in time, he had posed nude in Playgirl. And, you know, in the not necessarily straight world, you know, there were any number of, tell me if I'm wrong, horn gay contingent, there were guys who bought Playgirl, and there were women who bought Playboy. Things were never quite as straight as people thought. But Scott Brown was okay for getting elected or getting in the office for a short period of time after the death of Senator Edward M. Kennedy. But when it came time for him to face a real heavy intellectual heavyweight in the form of Elizabeth Warren, he was toast. But here's the thing. He did not get beaten on account of that Playgirl spread. He got beaten because, well, he was an asshole. And because his followers showed up with signs with pistols drawn on them that said, if Brown can't do it, Browning can. Browning being a famous make of firearm named after John Browning. Leave. So once again, you know, we find ourselves living in interesting times. But since we began the program talking about cop violence, and by the way, Amir Locke was laid to rest today. And what a horror and a tragedy that remains. Anybody been arrested? No? Uh-uh. But Amir Locke was laid to rest today. And the Reverend Al Sharpton, preaching his funeral, pointed out that Amir Locke had done abso-goddamn-lutely nothing wrong. That the only thing he was guilty of, at least until the for-profit media can find some vague allegation of some vague violation of some utterly ridiculous, irrelevant, unconnected transgression. Reverend Al Sharpton said of Amir Locke, Amir was not guilty of anything but being young and black in America. And you know what? He was not wrong. He also said today, we wouldn't be at a funeral this morning if it weren't for the fact that they're still doing no-knock warrants because in Minneapolis and in Minnesota. And he said, enough is enough. We are no longer going to be your nameless suspects. And she spoke directly to police. Linda Tyler did, his aunt. She said, if it is something you simply cannot do, we just ask that you resign today instead of resigning another brother or sister to her grave. And if you think being a police officer is a difficult profession, try being a black man. Again, just to review, Amir Locke was asleep in an apartment when cops on a no-knock warrant, because they were skeert, broke in the door and shot him on sight. And then there's a story coming out of Idaho. The Clearwater County Sheriff's deputies blew away a man, and his family said he had bipolar disorder, and the only threat he posed was to himself. A man named Mike Trappett, aged 48, was blasted 15 times while he was in a mental health crisis. He had a knife, and he was threatening to kill himself. Naturally, the Clearwater County, Idaho Sheriff's Department said, well, he was drunk and being aggressive. Family attorney Stephen Stubbs, speaking to the Lewiston Tribune, said the police immediately sent out false information about Mike, and we would have loved to have not have this press conference and to let the investigation happen properly and fully and get those results. But immediately after the shooting, get this, police sent out misinformation about Mike being aggressive and really painting Mike in a very bad light. We couldn't let that go unanswered. He was the primary caregiver for his parents, and he felt a passion about the needs of elderly people. But on January the 31st, 2022, his dog died, and he got a knife out of his parents' kitchen. His mom called the police because she was afraid he would hurt himself. She was not afraid that he would hurt her. He never had a history of aggression toward anyone except himself. The cops got there. They told his mom to go inside and shut the door. And then one officer shot him 10 times, and another officer blasted him 5. And then they went door knocking, the deputies did, going to the next door neighbors and said, listen, we need you to tell people that he was aggressive and that y'all were afraid of him. And the neighbors said no. Don't sit around waiting for anybody to be indicted over that. And don't sit around waiting for anybody to be indicted over a mere lock. And I hope you're not still sitting around waiting for somebody to face serious prison time over the murder of Breonna Taylor. As I noted at the beginning of the program, the federal trial of the officers who were involved in the murder, passively, I guess, involved in the murder of George Floyd, well, they got the best money the cop union can buy. Or best lawyers the money from the cop union can buy. And you know what? We do need to do something about the police in this country. Because one bad apple does spoil the barrel. Because it causes everything in the barrel to rot. So that's the program. It's really nice to be back. My next follow-up has been scheduled for June the 30th. Hopefully that'll happen. But for now, things seem to be going well. I'm glad we could get together and talk. And Friday on the front porch tomorrow. So thanks to everybody who keeps this program going with your kind contributions, your gifts. Thanks to those of you who set it and forget it with your gifts, with subscriptions via Patreon and PayPal. Thanks to our a la carte contributors. Fundraising goal for tomorrow will be where it was today, $275. We don't have to kick that back into gear until Monday. The $275 is for last Monday. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Hey, remember, brand new fresh Malloy on the way, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is HeadOn.live. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. Now a union shop, and proudly. And please reach out to your member of the House of Representatives. Please, please, please. Ask them to co-sponsor H.R. 2073, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, the AIC Act. It means the world to Appalachia. I hope you've got your vaccines. Get your free test kits. I think ours arrived. Wear your KN95 masks, no matter what anybody says, because the COVID-19 is not gone, and it's still deadly, and it's still killing. Maintain your social distance, 15 to 20 feet, just like Paul from Parts Unknown says. And if some lawyer from Frisco, Texas comes wandering your way saying,
I still feel like I've done the right thing, participate in a coup in the, against the Constitution of the United States.
Avoid that person like the plague. Because he is. Later.